range left and high kicking for all she's worth. Here's Michaela. See you tomorrow. Blimey, is she looking at the right person? Last time I kicked my leg higher than was prudent, I was rather worse the way for alcohol. It cost me a pair of jeans and rather a lot of blushes. So, as I gingerly lower myself into the announcer's chair, let me tell you about this afternoon's entertainment. Well, there's got to be a joke in there somewhere, but Tony Hancock is bringing out his biggest marrow in half an hour. The local veg-growing competition is looming, and he's going to win it by fair means or foul. In the Crime and Thrillers Hour, P Division are mixing religion and kissograms, which takes some doing, that's in an hour at one. And then in the final hour, the Big Town All-Stars are trying to drop Lorelei from the band, while in Steptoe and Son, Harold and Albert think they've finally picked up a genuine find. So that's 3 hours of comedy, crime and thrillers with me, Michaela Saunders, and BBC Seven. And it all starts with some pithy bits from the papers in the year 2000.
We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hodder.
Hello, and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with the instructions seen on the label of a toilet cleaning product, read by Brian Perkins.
Maxi Flush Concentrated Bleach Drop-In Block. Product should be used in a lavatory that's flushed regularly, at least once a month.
Thanks to Anne Griffiths of Acom York for sending in that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Nigella Lawson. On my left, Alan Corran and Linda Smith. Andy, who got into a bit of a jam at the WI?
Well, I think this is a shocking story, because yet again, the good name of this great country of ours has been dragged through the mud by mindless yobs in the WI. We were listening to a speech by the Prime Minister, and the good form, when the Prime Minister is boring the arse off you, is just to sit there and pretend you're listening. But no, they jeered and they heckled. Scones were thrown at one stage, apparently, and they gave him a dreadful doing over, basically. Poor old Tony. Actually, Tony's not very good at handling hecklers, is he? He was reduced to a sort of rictus smirk. And sort of rather... I suppose the problem is you can't come back with one-liners to little old ladies, can't you? You can't say, shut up, you bastard, in the front.
Well, he was shafted by the Redwood factor. He couldn't do the first verse of Jerusalem. He could do the second verse. He could do Chariots of Fire, because he'd seen the film. But he couldn't get going, and there he was. You could see his tonsils, and the smile was going up and down. No words were coming out. And he put them off.
It was actually at that point I knew he was going to have trouble when they started singing the Fat Les Euro 2000 song.
Yeah.
I thought, they're obviously jarred up.
Yeah.
I don't think they should travel into Europe, you know. Cage these animals.
Jack Straw has sent their photographs to every police force in Europe now. ladies in hats and Sue Ryder dresses, they'll be looking out for him. It was bewildering, the speech. He said, my generation is at the intersection between the old and the new. Isn't every generation? It's somewhere between the past and the future. And the
unlike, say, the people in the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Neither here nor there.
Who were nowhere. Yeah. They were nowhere. And the other one was, he said, he would have no truck with old-fashioned egalitarianism, but he believed passionately in equal opportunities for all. And I looked up egalitarianism. It means equal opportunities for all. Just gibberish.
Basically, Andy, he was dying on his arse.
He was.
He really was. When one of them shouted out, taxi for the Prime Minister, he knew it was all over.
But it was all totally unspun. I mean, nobody helped him at all. I watched, whenever it was, last night or 3 days ago, if it's a repeat, John Prescott going into number 10 and asked what he thought about it. He said, I loved the calendar. There's this terrible image of this fat slob while his wife is down the hairdresser with the WI, octogenarian calendar. Terrible when they're off message, when they're let off the rope. They don't know how to handle
that's
anything.
That's politicians for you, I think.
Indeed.
One Labour spin doctor claimed the heckling had been organised by what he called the WI's provisional wing. Accusation proved all too true with the discovery of a cache of jam-making equipment at a secret dump in Tunbridge Wells. 2 points to Andy. Nigella, who was bowled over by the Queen?
Oh, yes, and this was Camilla, wasn't it, who met the Queen last week in what was meant to be a private lunch to kind of get everything sorted out. And, of course, despite the fact that it's a private lunch, everyone's been writing about what they talked about, which we presume is horses and dogs and that sort of thing. But as far as I believe, that she'd met her several times before. This was just a lunch for the cameras, wasn't it?
It wasn't actually a lunch at Highgate, it was a barbecue. And the headline in the Sun was Camilla at Barbie. And the idea of putting Camilla and Barbie together in the same could only serve to distress the woman.
If it was genuinely the first time she'd met his girlfriend, do you think they got to that stage where they start swapping embarrassing stories about him when he was younger?
I don't think there's any such thing except an embarrassing story about him, do you?
I mean, would they recognise one another? Would Camilla have said, "Don't tell me, I know that face"?
I've licked the back of your head many a time. Probably got out the best china, didn't she? Which would take some doing at Buckingham Palace, wouldn't it?
It's a bit
always
grim.
You suddenly think, I've lived here 18 years, I've never seen these cups.
It's a bit grim when they're 52 and borrow your surgical stockings, though, isn't it? I knew I'd left those demeroids somewhere.
Oh, well, that's something to replace the John Prescott picture with, isn't it?
I wonder if the Queen said, "I've heard a lot about you."
You're my son's mistress. That must be interesting.
I bet Prince Philip insisted on taking charge of the barbecue as well. Burnt to a cinder. I know what I'm doing, woman. Get away.
The suggestion that marriage is now on the cards grew after it was revealed that Camilla had been holding a number of private meetings both with the Archbishop of Canterbury and Martin Bashir. So 2 points to Nigella Linda, who gave Tony Blair a lesson in populist politics.
Oh, this is little William Hague, who has decided that his best chance for electoral success is to try and be less tolerant than New Labour. So, you've got to say he's ambitious. At least, give him that, give the lad that. So he's come out with this idea. They've already got these seats for unruly pupils who are normally, what's this horrible word, excluded. Excluded kids now are taught in these kind of porter cabin affairs, I suppose, in the school grounds by specially trained SAS teachers. And apparently it works quite well, and William Hague, you know, has got to top it, so he's saying, right, we'll do the same thing, only not at the school. It'll be on Devil's Island, and it'll be surrounded by sharks and crocodiles, and they'll never be able to escape in a million years. So that's it, really, isn't it?
You called him Little William Hague, actually.
He's not little at all.
I was at a party this week with him, and he's actually very... It's a bit like seeing one of the Teletubbies, because you expect them to be too tiny, don't you? And in fact, there's a full-size actor inside.
When are you seeing the Teletubbies?
Even more often than I see William Hague.
There was another story, though, saying that that Blair was losing the populist touch because a Labour peer said that Blair is not popular with the people like Margaret Thatcher was. I had to go lie down in the darkened room. Maybe it's just me. Maybe my memory is... serving me poorly. Maybe it was just me.
He's never had the populist touch, has he? He's like a geography teacher at a school disco. Everyone wants him to leave so they can start enjoying themselves.
He's the teacher who says you can call him by his first name, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Until you do, and then he turns nasty.
Yeah, exactly.
William Hague says unruly children should be removed from schools. In recent weeks, Hague has struck a populist chord by railing against asylum seekers, criminals, and now school children. At present, he still has no plans to attack anyone with a vote. So 2 points to Linda. Alan, how was Stephen Byers trumped by the wrong trousers?
Yeah, Stephen Byers. How a prat stood up at, inaugurated a great new initiative. It was British Trouser Week or something. And he stood up in his natty little suit and said, we must all do our bit for the British textile industry. And someone in the middle of an audience much like this said, let's have a look at your label. Took his jacket off and said, made in South Africa. Which rather embarrassed him. About all there is to it, really.
Yep.
He's not had a good couple of months, is he? He's a bit accident prone, I think. I think he might disappear under a bus in Downing Street. Shortly. Awful tragedy.
At the launch of a government aid package for British textiles, Mr. Byers admitted he was wearing a South African suit. He apologised for his error, saying he'd meant to wear a British suit, but he'd left it in the back of his BMW. The scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. We start round two with an item seen in the Telegraph.
John Lovering, chairman of the clothes chain Peacocks, is delighted that the number of clothes lifted from its stores is rising. Its level of theft is now similar to other trendier brands.
Thanks to Ted Shepherd of Thelwell for that. Andy, who was ordered to crack open a windows.
Ruler of the universe, Bill Gates, has been ordered by the American Treasury, or whatever it would be, to cut Microsoft in half. Because he's been competing unfairly with the other computer manufacturers, and he's stringing it out. He's going to take it to appeal, and he's not going to take it lying down. I'm sure he'll do something. Can't he bring the world to a halt anyway, if he wants to? Isn't he like Ming the Merciless? Hasn't he just got a button under his desk whereby every Microsoft computer in the world ceases to function? He'd be a fool if he hasn't.
What's Whittington do going to do anyway?
I don't know. I'm not Judge Thomas Penfield Jackson.
Right.
Brian will know because he reads the news. Brian, what's the story? Come on.
I just read it. Yeah.
You told me you write half of it. You get a fee, you told me.
Only the animal bits.
Only the animal bits. Well, now you know.
2 points to Andy. Nigella, to what lengths will other countries go to live it up for longer than us Brits?
I don't know.
Oh, it's questions, isn't it? It's some kind of quiz.
Invite someone along on the show and you interrogate them like that. Give us the question again, please,
you're so
Simon.
Clever, you tell me.
Well, I know.
I've got a script.
I'm not that clever. I can do that.
All right, what's the answer?
We're 14th in the list of people who snuff it, really. Just above Norway, which is like being the Eurovision Song Contest. Nul point for the British. It's because we eat things and smoke and drink and appear on news quizzes that we just get old quicker than other people.
Who's 15th?
The Norwegians.
Oh, right.
We're well above Germany, though, aren't we?
Are we?
They're about 29, so in our group...
That's very encouraging.
We're doing quite well.
Isn't 14th quite good if it's all the nations
yes,
in the world?
Yes, how many countries in the world are there?
About 162.
Fine, we're doing very well.
Mm. I'm glad we're above Germany. It's probably the rust from the helmets that gets them early, wouldn't it?
I've always wanted to work with Stan Baldwin.
I think they should send Alan over to Euro 2000 as a conciliator.
The publication of the world's longevity league table by the World Health Organization ranked Britain 14th. Japan has the longest life expectancy. This is put down partially to their healthy diet and exercise regime, mostly to people hanging on in the grim hope that they'll get that last Pokemon card to complete the set. 2 points to Nigella. Oh, no, sorry.
No,
2 points
fine.
To Alan.
Okay.
2 points to Alan Corran. Alan, who got into a right royal barney over GM foods.
This is Duke of Edinburgh. Again. Who talk about hostages to fortune. He said that genetically modified foods wouldn't do half as much damage as the grey squirrel, which was an exotic foreign animal that came here and ruined everyone's lives. And he speaks as he knows, and indeed finds. And he's much more worried about the grey squirrel, which is getting into his muesli and interfering with his rapeseed. And he's said that he's all in favour of genetically modified foods, mainly because Prince Charles is totally against them. And Edinburgh and Anne, indeed, see eye to slitty eye on this, so the pair of them think the countryside should be given over to chemicals.
To be fair to Prince Philip...
Huh?
He was a mate of yours, Alan. Didn't you go to his birthday party?
Yes, you slept in his bed, probably, on one of your travels, I bet. His actual quote was that the grey squirrel does more damage than potatoes. I think that's hard to argue with.
Well, potatoes don't dig up my crocuses every year.
And potatoes don't terrorise red squirrels, do they?
Or nick your video?
Yeah, grey squirrels nick my video.
Really?
It's buried in the garden under a tree. What is the point of that? It's just wanton destruction, isn't it?
Those of us who remember the great days of Esther Ranson could easily see...
When were they, Alan?
...how a red squirrel... Well, it's when she did those funny-shaped vegetables that always look like... And a red squirrel could be terrified by a potato that you wouldn't want a red squirrel on a dark night to come up against Michelangelo's potato, would you?
That's the trouble with red squirrels. They're a bit feeble, aren't they? They need to be a bit feistier. I think psychologically in their head, they'd already lost the battle.
Yes, they got eaten. This is always a bit of a disadvantage in the squirrel survival business. The grey squirrel ate them. So the red squirrels didn't have much to say about it. Because they were inside the grey squirrels by the time the first battle was over.
That sort of talk helps Jerry. That's... Defeatism of the worst kind.
I'd like to know what video the squirrels buried, please. You remember? It was a video cassette. It wasn't your whole video, was it? It was the VCR. They didn't rip the whole thing out.
Look, all I'm saying is that's what I said on the insurance form. That. Which I've never mentioned it. And there was a camera as well with that video and.
Public feuding between Charles and Philip resembles nothing so much as the pathetic spectacle of two bald men fighting over a throne. Quote from Mark Twain, some of you might recognise.
But obviously not. Condescend to our audience, Simon.
I think you should turn WI on him there. Patronising you, but he's wearing jeans as well, isn't he?
Get security down here, I don't feel safe now.
Linda, which fish now comes with chips, whether you like it or not?
This is the robot lamprey.
It is.
I'm glad you asked me this one, yeah. The robot lamprey, I'm sure you've seen this, Alan.
Yes.
Scientists, well, hopefully scientists, not just car mechanics or something, have wired up the brain of a lamprey to a computer. A robot thing. Wheel, actually, but they're calling it a robot, but it's sort of a wheel. And the computer is powered by the lamprey brain, see? But the terrible thing is, they chose an evil lamprey. It was an evil lamprey with a bad brain. It was about to be hung for murder. So now the wheel is running around doing terrible things, and only Peter Cushing can save us. No, I've seen this film, definitely. So that's what it is. At last, an end to no robot lamprey misery.
Isn't a lamprey, that's a very flat fish, isn't it? They're just kind of...
I mean, as fish go,
slightly tubular.
Yeah, it's like an eel. It's like an eel.
Slightly tubular. It's sort of halfway between those sort of razor clams and a fish. Delicious, it is.
Very nice. Really, Ponsy, it's a Jacobean pun, as those who know their Webster, that women like that thing which, like the lamprey, hath not a bone in it.
You see, they're impressed with that, Simon, but they didn't like you patronising them with that.
I'm leaning on a lamprey at the corner.
I'm sorry, I don't want to get over technical now, but isn't there a danger in putting the brains of fish into computers? Isn't it likely that the computer is going to leg it down to the sea and go for a swim? I mean, madness. It's dabbling with nature.
They could have used a grey squirrel's brain, would have frightened the shit out of the Duke of Edinburgh. Teach you about modification.
Asked what advantages a fish with wheels might have, the scientist said he'd find it easier to get a date on Saturday night. sort of surrealist, that one.
Yeah.
The scores at the end of round three are thrillingly Andy and Nigella with a very creditable 10, but Alan and Linda well in the lead with 14 points. And before we start the final round, here's an item from the Emerald Self-Catering Cottages brochure.
bother with the item.
Why is that funny? I don't know.
Now, you're just putting pressure on Brian now. Don't listen to him, Brian.
Before we start the fun around, here's Brian.
Detached cottage for five, plus child, bed linen included in rent. Please bring your own towels, colour TV, washing machine and garden furniture.
Thanks to Tom Lloyd of Newcastle for spotting that one. Andy, who's 500 years old, 17 feet high and in need of a visit to the optician.
This is Michelangelo's David. They found that the eyes, it's not just that they follow you round the room, but actually looking in opposite directions. They're focusing in different places, and it's quite an interesting story, but the thing I didn't understand was they said they discovered this when a computer did a digital replica of Michelangelo's David, but you can see it from looking at it.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
No, it's enormous. All you can see when you look, when you're...
No, it isn't.
In the square.
about to say, he squints the least of his shortcomings.
I know. I mean, the left one points one way and the right one points the other. That is absolutely true. And the eyes aren't too good either. It's all you can see.
But it's meant to be, or in the Renaissance, it was thought to be a sign of great beauty to have a squint. The thing of the gaze not meeting at a proper point is meant to be very alluring.
Is that why people look more attractive when they're pissed?
All the film stars.
No, they look more attractive when you're pissed.
All the film stars that are meant to be very sexy and good looking all have very poor sight.
That's right.
Like Marilyn Monroe and Clark Gable and everything. It's because their vision stops somewhere about a foot in front of them, and that gives them that kind of squinty look. And you see, we still find it attractive. You see, I don't know what the problem is with him.
Bringing it back to David there, that actually makes David much braver in taking on Goliath than we even thought, because he's not tall enough. They were turning, he's going, come on, I'll take you both on. Come on. You fancy son, come on. I don't care.
Linda, which dogged air passenger faced a rough ride?
Oh, the frozen dog. This is a heartwarming story, really. Not for the dog, I suppose, but a flight in America. The baggage handlers had put this dog that was travelling with its owner, called Dakota, in the wrong hold, the unheated one. So they suddenly realised this halfway to their destination, that the dog would be getting a little bit chilled by now. So they had to go up and tell the owner that there could be a problem with his... I know, it's awful, isn't it? And then the steward was just about to say something to him and noticed this man who was working on his laptop computer, the screensaver was a picture of the dog. So obviously he really loved the dog. But then they said, well, we're not sure if he's made it yet. We're not sure if he's made it. And then they made an emergency landing at a different airport and hooray, got the thumbs up. Dog was fine. Just a bit chilly, but absolutely fine. He was allowed to finish the journey in the plane. It was lovely. But the interesting thing about this is the dog couldn't draw attention to its plight because it was a special kind of dog, a South African dog called a Basenji.
Absolutely.
Who can't bark.
So it was
doing mime, desperately sat there doing mime. Honestly, trying to get out of an imaginary box, fighting a fierce wind.
Why would anybody want to have a dog that can't bark? I mean, if bandits got hold of you, tied you up and threw you down a mine, the dog wouldn't be able to go and tell anybody. You can't see Rin Tin Tin doing that, can you? I mean, Rin Tin Tin had a full vocabulary. Oh, you mean the knots are difficult to untie? Well, I should bring a knife.
Just subtly, with the just little looks in his eye, you could tell something was amiss, you know. He'd, like, I don't know, wake you in the middle of the night if there were burglars with a sort of, like, aye-aye look in his eye.
And, Brian, did you write this story?
Yeah, good one. This is one of your better efforts, I think, Brian.
It's more believable than the other one, so...
I wonder why he called the dog Dakota. I mean, do you think he'd been teaching it to fly? Chucking it... chucking the bugger off a cliff and said, "Oh, fine, okay, I'll put you in a plane and show you what it's like." I think this owner needs to be investigated. He's got a barkless dog that he puts in a refrigerator and he calls it Dakota. This dog's going to be extremely neurotic. Won't be able to tell anyone, but it'll be extremely neurotic. Go to a dog psychiatrist, won't say a word.
After it had been rescued, the dog was allowed in the cabin of the plane to be cared for and pampered by the staff. This was so successful, the airline is now considering introducing this treatment for human passengers. As a special treat at the end of the flight, Dakota was allowed to go through customs and have a police dog sniff his backside. Alan, who really did steal the show with a priceless performance on the Antiques Roadshow?
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. It's always one's dream watching the Antiques Roadshow when people come with all that tat. And someone says to them, where do you get this? Well, it is part of the Brixmack robbery. I just wanted to know what to insure it for. This is bloke nicked some silver and didn't know how much it was worth. So he went on the Antiques Roadshow. And the worst thing about it is he's on television and the police can't find him. Actually, he went on the Antiques Roadshow with all his silver and they said, yes, it's extremely nice. It's Paul Galatier in his 18th century and terrific. And he said, thanks very much. He put it into a bag marked swag, readjusted his mask and his striped jersey, and nobody laid a finger on him.
They'll change Antiques Roadshow now, of course, because there'll be a BBC memo going round saying, you know, these poor old biddies will be, they'll have a light shone in their eyes saying, where do you get this thing? Come on. Don't give us that. It's been in the family garbage. A nice, nasty one. Yeah. You've got to give the bloke quite a lot of points for cheek, haven't you? That is a bit of lateral thinking.
Actually, it is impressive. That's pretty cool, isn't it, really?
I think they should let him off if they catch him. Don't you?
Oh, for sure.
I think if he gets taken to court, they should say, well, it was theft, but you gave News Quiz 3 funny minutes out of that.
That's when the alarm bells first started ringing. The show's production staff said that was when the bloke tried to drive away in Michael Aspel's car. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Right, well, thank you to Kathleen Barber of Lowestoft, who sent this in. Police are seeking eyewitnesses after the theft of a man's glass eyeball. The victim, in Illinois, believes a neighbour, who also wears a glass eye, took a shine to it and stole it from his pocket, replacing it with his own. The police said, unluckily, the victim didn't see the incident.
Alan.
Well, I have a poignant insight, Simon, into how life is in the West Country. From the Hereford Times. There's Alice Bennett, 47, was devastated when, having shovelled almost a ton of horse manure into bags at the Lempster farm she runs with her husband, she found she was no longer wearing her wedding ring. But heartbreak turned to joy when, after 6 hours of desperate searching, she found the ring in the 33rd bag. This was the happiest day of my life, she said.
And our final scores are Andy and Nigella with a very worthy 14 points, but Alan and Linda are this week's winners with 18 points. With that, until September, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz were Alan Carr and Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith and Nigella Lawson. The chairman was Simon Hoggett, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Coles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.
Next week, the fuel crisis of September 2000, Eric the Eel, Aspirin and the Ruddy Duck all feature in the News Quiz. And to find out more, you'll have to join us again next Tuesday at 12 noon and 7 here on BBC 7.
Welcome to BBC 7.
bbc.co.uk/BBC7.
It looks like you're listening to a trail. Do you want help with that?
The BBC 7 website has all the information you need about what's on and when. You can also catch from the last week. through our Listen Again service. There's loads about our kids' shows. Plus, there's our weekly newsletter, message board, competitions, features, biographies, and quizzes. bbc.co.uk/BBC7.
Goodbye.
Getting two twin brothers and sisters, getting a twin brother and another, the his, getting both twins dressed and into their cars, into a car, isn't as easy as it sounds.
People Like Us, Wednesday nights in the Comedy Club at 10.
That's one for Wednesdays on 7. Roy Mallard won't be getting to grips with the twins. This week, it's In-Depth Legalese and the Solicitor. Find out more tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning and at 10 in the evening.
Classic comedy on BBC 7.
And this is one of the best. Stand by to whip out your tape measure for Tony Hancock this week. It's going to be a big one.
We present Tony Hancock, Bill Kerr, Sidney James, Andre Melly, and Kenneth Williams in
Hancock's Half Hour.
To me, to you. Mind the rose bed. Round your end. Careful.
Wait. Now, wait a minute. Watch the lawnmower. Now, wait. Let me get a better grip. Right.
Left.
Hup. To you.
To me. Wait a minute. It's slipping. Andre, quick. Andre, help us. Grab the middle, quick.
I've got it.
Now, all together.
Left.
That's it. Now, slowly down. Careful. Don't drop it. Slowly now. Gently does it. There. Well done. There's no doubt about it, Bill. This is the biggest marrow I've ever grown.
Yeah, she sure is a beaut, Tub. But you don't have to keep weighing it every day. You're disturbing it.
I must keep a check on her progress. How much did she weigh this morning?
Well, let me see. 8 stone, 7 3/4 pounds.
Hello, she's gained another couple of pounds since yesterday. What's the measurements, Bill?
Length, 5'4".
Good, 1.5 inches up.
Circumference, from top to bottom, 38, 24, 39.
Yes, we'll have to fatten that middle out if she's going to win the vegetable competition.
Or you could leave her as she is and try for the Miss England title.
Less levity, if you please. Vegetable growing is a serious business. It's about time I won a prize. I've been trying long enough.
But you won first prize in the pumpkin competition last year.
I did not. They disqualified me. Well, not me, me pumpkin. Some evil-minded person spread a rumor that I'd been pumping it up. Just because I stuck a little rubber patch over where Bill dug the fork in it. Still, I'll get me own back this year. By the time this marrow's finished growing, there'll be nobody in the country who can touch me.
Oh, what about the man next door? He's entered for the competition, and his marrow is nearly as big as ours.
Never. Not in the same class. He doesn't half get annoyed, you know. Particularly when I lean over the fence and ask him how his cucumber's getting on.
I wouldn't be so cocky if I were you, Tub. There's 3 more weeks till the competition, and a lot can happen in that time. Next door's determined to win, you know. You want to watch him when he's pretending to weed his garden. A crafty look round, and a dozen snails sail over the fence.
He's been doing that for years. What he doesn't know is that I sharpen their teeth up and throw them back. Shh, hello. Look. Speak of the devil. There he is, look. Looking out of his bedroom window. Morning! 5'4", 8 stone, 7 and still growing. That's knocked him. Look at him bashing his wife.
Well, come on, Tony. Put the marrow back in its bed.
Careful now, don't bruise it. There's 50 quid prize at stake here. Yeah, I don't like the colour of that patch of skin there. I'll have to get the sunray lamp on that bit.
You'll be needing some more fertilizer.
Yes, I want 4 grams of rock phosphate, 5 ounces of muriate of potash, 1.5 pounds of potassium, 2 bags of leaf mold, 7 grams of sulfate of potash, 6 ounces of phosphorus, and 2 gallons of sulfuric acid.
Sulfuric acid?
That's the spray is next door.
Tony, that's cheating.
It's either him or me. I've set my heart on winning the town council's vegetable competition this year. There's nothing else in my garden that'll stand a chance. My tomatoes are right off this year. Look at them. They wouldn't get a second glance in the grape section, they wouldn't. As for me beetroots, well, I ask you, all root and no beet. And I'm disgusted with me dwarf beans. I'm really brought down by me dwarf beans. I'd expected such a lot from them, and what happens? A green fly sits on one and you can't see it.
Where did you go wrong?
I don't know. I did exactly what Fred Streeter said on the telly. Plant your beans, he said. Put a pole in next to them and spread plenty of fertilizer. And what happened?
What?
The pole started growing and killed all my beans up. Well, now if you'll just...
Oi, you!
Well, Tony, there's a man looking over the back gate.
Oi, you! Podge!
Podge?
Open the gate! Let us in, mate!
Who is it?
Might be the dustman.
Can't be him, he came yesterday.
Are you sure?
Yes, there's his trail of rubbish up the garden path.
Well, go and see what he wants.
I say, can I help you?
Yes, mate, I'm from the council. I've got a little bit of work to do in here.
Work? It's a bit late, isn't it? It's 3:30.
I know.